Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Rachel Platt?
What's that with Rachel Platt?
I forgot how this works. All right, Jeff, you ready?
I am ready. Who is number one? Your Memphis Tigers defeated the Ole Miss Rebels by a score of 15-10. Ending the series, Ole Miss does not want to play again, and so they will have to ponder last loss for the foreseeable future. Memphis has now won 2 out of 3 in the series, sends Ole Miss packing 15-10. Attendance was 44,107, but I'll be honest with you, it looked good.
On TV, it looked good.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked good. Like, there was nothing at all. There was nothing. Looked good. I don't really know. Like, my friend Zach McMillan said that they had some turnstile issues again. He saw people going in, whatever. So, honestly, I don't know. At this point, we don't even know what these crowds look like. Like, people tend to space out a little more, right? People don't have individual
That's
chairs.
That's one of the reasons why I used to always love watching games at the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, so you could space out a little more so it can look full, and maybe there's, you know, 10 seats where normally 13 or 14 people would be sitting because they're little, and yet it still looks full. I got no idea. It certainly felt, I would have guessed that it was over 50 the way it looked. It looked good. And that's all that matters. It looked good. And
yeah,
my
girlfriend did say that one of her really good friends, they were having trouble getting in before the game. I think that led to some of the early comments of like, oh boy, what's this going to look like?
There's always, you have to wait 10 minutes into the game as it fills in. You're just going to have to do that.
Especially on 11 a.m.
Also, by
games.
The way, they ran out of water again. I mean, what in the world?
I do not understand how that happens.
Like, how do you run?
Water is not perishable.
It just happened. Yes, you can use the same water all season long. It literally just happened to you the last time you had a big crowd. I just don't understand it. They supposedly ran out of water. I heard that from several people. Heard it from my guy who works on my pool, that he tried to go get a cup of ice for his wife and some water. No, they didn't have any. So this is just boring. I heard that. So those are little things that were too bad. But fundamentally, great day for the University of Memphis. How about that defense, which absolutely stuffed. It shows this is what you're supposed to do. This is what literally Tennessee and Ole Miss have been tiger-highing the University of Memphis for decades. And so, yes, if you have a chance to take your shot, you take your shot.
You know what I've always hated? Act like you've been there before.
Yeah.
Like, when someone used to say, like, if you scored, now, like, I remember the first time, like, I haven't been there before. Like, I wanted to do a freaking dance.
Yeah, we have
like,
not been here. This is the place where Memphis has not been
before. I don't know if I'm ever going
before,
to be back.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
Well, and for Tennessee fans to be lecturing Memphis on how to behave in victory when they're dealing with just shut up and accept your humiliation. I don't mean David Cobb in particular, just generally. Like, yes,
well,
you've been humiliated.
I talked with David about it yesterday.
You feel how the other, you get a sense of how the other half lives. This is what Memphis fans have been putting up with for decades, having to eat this stuff from other people. And you think in this moment they're going to say, yeah, you know, you're going to be better than us. Again, no, you take this moment. You've been literally getting smashed your whole life. Anyway, you talked to David yesterday. And David's like, I felt bad. Like, we were going back and forth. David, like, grew up reading me. But I just couldn't believe he was lecturing Memphis fans on how to act.
Yeah, I talked to him. I also explained, I was like, when you understand the systematic disadvantages that a group of five school has against two SEC programs that are part of your, that are going to be like, you know, part of your region. I mean, you can even throw Arkansas into this if you want to, but at the end of the day, like, if Memphis is riding
high,
they
won't even play them. And it's not because they have respect for the program. It's because they don't deign to give the program anything. Like it's and they'd rather be humiliated by Georgia Tech by Georgia State for $950,000 than Memphis. So it was fine. David's a good guy and whatever else. I honestly, my analysis of it, he's salty. He's salty. He's depressed about Tennessee. And I understand it. I mean, I totally understand being depressed about Tennessee. Don't you?
Yeah, but it all goes back to the same thing with me. Like, Tennessee, at some point, they're going to have to look in the mirror. Like, with Memphis, Justin Fuente leaves. That could have been the end of the world. That could have been, that's the best it's ever going to be. No, they went out and found another guy that can do the job, too. Like, Tennessee, in the end of the day, they found a guy that is a proven winner in Leach. But God forbid he doesn't believe in run-pass balance or he doesn't light up a recruiting rankings. And so Phil Fulmer leads a coup to get the AD ousted. They get the guy that he wants.
It's a clown show now.
You and I talked about when, as soon as they hired.
They're bad up front.
As soon as they hired Pruitt, I was like, I don't think that's the guy.
This is not like four interceptions made at fluky loss. They were beaten up on the line of scrimmage by, we'll get to them. We'll get to Tennessee. Anyway, on Memphis, defense looked great. Offense did not. Couple things, though. On the offense, let's go to the bright side first, okay? They controlled the clock for 6 minutes against an SEC defense at the end. That was impressive.
Almost had three possessions in the second half.
Yeah, they. I mean, this is not what the Memphis offense does.
No, they're not a ball control offense.
But they won the time of possession dramatically. They by 38-41 to 21-19.
Yep.
Right. So they held the ball, and I gotta say, that fourth down call, they're up by three. The offense has done nothing, and the defense hasn't allowed anything. They have a chance to pin. They have a chance. This is after. No, this is. They were up by 50. They were up. This was when they were up. Yeah, this is right. This is. They're up by five. They're up 15-10, right? The last fourth down call.
Yes.
They're up by five. They have a chance. We just seen them pin Ole Miss at the two.
Correct.
Do that again, win the game. That's what every football coach does, right? Plus, in the last fourth and two, last time you had a fourth and two, you threw the quick out and got stuffed, right? And now you had a fourth and one after that. Brady had the sneak for a... So you last...
Correct.
The last two fourth down conversions, you were 50%, okay?
Correct.
So now it's fourth and two. What were your odds of getting that?
Fourth and two at that point, probably somewhere around 50-50. Because they'd been on the field.
Is it a ballsy call or is it a stupid call?
I personally thought it was stupid because...
At the time, I thought it was stupid.
I thought it was stupid. Yeah.
Now, what I will tell you this. What Norvell said yesterday was, well, first of all, like, great call, great execution.
Yeah,
sloppy game was beautifully done, right? He said on the previous fourth down, which people killed him for calling that play, to Coxie, right? Mm-hmm.
It was a slip screen.
Yeah, to Coxie. He said yesterday, I asked him about it, he said it was a run-pass option.
Yep.
Brady was absolutely right because Ole Miss was misaligned. They had one guy out there. We just missed a block. If we hadn't missed the block, it would have been.
I get that. I also thought Ole Miss baited that. I think they were making it look like he was uncovered, and to me it looked like they rolled immediately at the snap. Like that was kind of why he missed the block. Like, the other guy was crashing.
I'd have to go back and look at it. Yesterday, he was convinced that it was the right call, right play, whatever else, and they should have gotten that one. And in the end, listen, I give him credit. Brady's getting criticized anyway.
Yeah, sure.
But Brady and if they had not converted and Ole Miss had gone down and win, they would be getting eviscerated today. And so when it works, you got to give him credit, right?
That's the thing. Like, he had... At the end of the day, like, it was a gutsy call. He went for it. He got it. Then you get the tip of the cap. But you're saying, like, what would I have done? I would have punted.
I would have punted in that circumstance. So anyway, so then there is the offense. I mean, Kenny Gainwell looked really good. He was really good down the stretch. But they got some things to figure out. And obviously, Brady was catching a lot of criticism after that game. And for those who thought that he would come back and have a much stronger arm, it did not appear so. His numbers, 23 of 31, that's not bad, although the most of them were 3 yard that was, completions. That, right?
At one point, he was like 14 of 17 for 40 something yards.
Exactly,
like,
right. No, they were all 5 yard. They were all 5 yard passes. Let's be honest. He didn't throw the ball downfield. There's the one across the middle to Pat, I think. And
he had several throws that I thought were open. He had several
that
throws
hung in the air.
That hung in the air. Brady throws a nice, you know how you some quarterbacks throw a receiver open? Brady had a nice day where he threw a lot of receivers covered.
Right.
And then he had a couple of throws, like there was a tight end seam that was wide open.
He missed that one, right?
Yeah.
So it was, listen, they won, and what
Patrick Taylor was awesome.
The line yesterday was that from Mike was Brady never had a chance to set his feet because our run blocking was great, our pass blocking sucked, and Brady, and we do know this, Brady is not a guy who can just wing it with his arm, right? For Brady to get mustard on the ball, he's got to be able to set his feet, even with the moving pocket, which they did constantly. He was never, he rarely had a clean pocket and a chance to set his feet. So if you want to have hope in Brady White, Memphis fans, it's that maybe the pocket will be cleaner and he'll have a chance to set his feet.
And but I think the other
if you're skeptical, I understand the skepticism right now.
I think the other thing is, I think Ole Miss's defensive line is going to be more athletic
than almost anyone they play.
And I think on the flip side, I also think that Ole Miss's secondary, for the most part, those are pretty good athletes. And I think you'll see receivers get more and more separation throughout the course of the year. I mean, it wasn't like Brady was missing. Like, he missed a couple of open throws. But for the most part, he was not missing.
No, you're right. He wasn't missing wide open guys.
Yeah.
He wasn't throwing behind a wide open guy.
You're not sitting there going, like, what? Like, those guys were covered. Like, that's a tough day to throw the football.
I don't actually remember him pushing it down the field at all, really, ever.
He missed
that one wide open that would have for a touchdown.
And then there was a couple of post patterns that I thought Memphis probably had a step on a DB that allowed him to recover. But, I mean, that's part of it.
Right. So, you know, we'll see. Again, we'll see where the explosiveness comes from. It was my concern about this team is if you take out even Patrick Taylor, as good as he was, there were a bunch of runs where he got 12 yards where Darrell Henderson would have gotten 70.
Oh, there's no question. His long run was 15 of the day, and there were some. There were some holes.
There were, and it's just like this is one, and we were spoiled. Like Darrell Henderson would have turned that into 70.
Yeah,
and
that's Patrick why he's Taylor, playing for the Rams.
And Patrick
on Sunday.
Taylor got 12.
Yeah,
you know, and. But listen, that was a great day for Memphis. A great, great scene, great atmosphere. And so, tip of the cap to everybody. And huge in terms of going forward. This coming weekend is just completely different because of what happened. Because they won, right?
100%.
I mean, people would be, you know, glum as hell heading into this. There'd be no excitement over this game against Southern this weekend. Instead, there's great excitement because they are 1-0. And, you know, they should now until Navy.
They won the game, and it didn't feel like they stole a game. It didn't feel like that it was fluky. They had the better team on Saturday.
They were better.
Yes.
They beat up an SEC team. Now, it's a bad SEC team, but they beat up. They dominated that game, and you were like, how the hell is Ole Miss in this, right?
Yes. Well, you thought, like, had say, for instance, Ole Miss taken that last drive and scored, and Memphis wouldn't have been able to score again. Ole Miss would have stolen a game.
Yes, that was exactly right. Memphis was vastly the better team. By the way, on Brady's pick, he was trying to throw it at the ground, and it just slipped out of his hands. That's what evidently what happened on the pick. He was not trying to force a completion to whatever. He was trying to throw it away, and so that's what happened there. Okay, onward. Who are we also going to honor today on the Fight Song Roundup?
The team of the weekend. Jeff, there was never a doubt.
I covered Patrick Banks. Patrick Nix?
Yes, Patrick. Bo's the son.
Yeah, I covered Patrick Nix. I covered that game where he flew to Frank Sanders to beat Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Alabama, yeah. I covered that game. That's how old I am. Anyway, Bo didn't look good most of the game.
He threw electric interceptions, I will say that. Like, every throw, I fell in love. Because he was like, at one point, he was like 9 of 30, and I'm like, I can't quit this kid. Like, he was fearless throwing into coverage.
And then wins it.
On a throw that he threw, he stared down the receiver.
Yep.
I still have no idea what the safety was doing because the safety went and covered the receiver. He's staring him down. He threw it short into the inside. That is a throw that gets picked off almost exclusively against that coverage. And Williams went up and made the play.
It was a great play.
It was a great great catch.
Your favorite, you had?
I had Auburn minus 3.5. And I also might have loaded up on Auburn at halftime because
I
saw what they were
doing. How do you feel about Auburn now?
That defense is legit, but Bo's not good enough at this point for them to be a contender.
I think that's right. Do you have any sympathy for Oregon?
No, none.
They the played, Pac-12 generally?
They played so scared. So scared. Like, you quote-unquote had the best...
you're exactly right.
They played... They had the best offensive line in college football. They were literally the entire first half like, get the ball out of your hands immediately. Get the ball out of your hands. Like, and it worked to an extent, but during the second half when Auburn figured out what they were doing and they started pressing the receivers a little bit more, taking away some of that quick screen game, Herbert was just like looking to get rid of the football and checking it down. Phillip Rivers would be proud.
Your view about Herbert was confirmed.
Yes. When he has pressure, he panics.
He does not. Yeah. Anyway, shout out to Auburn. Help salvage the day for a rough day for the SEC. But Auburn helped salvage the day. Next. I was just happy for Jalen Hurts, weren't you? Like, that was impressive.
I think he's found a good spot for him.
Lincoln Riley just, like, cranks out Heisman Trophy winners.
Yeah.
He's not going to win the Heisman.
I still saw...
Listen, 20 of 23, 332 mm-hmm. yards, 3 touchdowns passing, 16-176, 3 touchdowns rushing. That's a nice start for young Jalen Hurts.
There's no question. And to me, the biggest difference, you could see it in the game, he's able to sit back and kind of... their offensive line is clearly legit again.
Right.
All the questions everyone had about their offensive line being... having to replace 4 guys and whatnot.
They just send offensive linemen to the NFL. That's all they do.
And to me, you have to see what he looked like with time. He made a bunch of really good throws, but he's still, God, he is a freaking load to take down. When he takes off and runs, you better wrap up because he's so physical as a runner that he does. That's where I don't think he gets credit.
Right. All right, and... you know, we're not going to do the strict honor 5
yeah.
and blow up 3, mm-hmm. 5-1.
Yeah.
Particularly because there are so many who deserve to be blown up.
That was the story of the weekend.
That was the story of the weekend. Who are we destroying first? Oh, God. Is it piling on?
Worst piling on.
Worst loss in the history of the University of Tennessee.
I think they said, according to ESPN FBI, it's the 4th biggest upset of all time.
I mean, they lost to Wyoming, you know.
Sure. I mean, they were a 26-point underdog. We've seen bigger underdogs win.
$950,000 they paid for that loss. They were to a team that was 2-10 last year. I mean, you all know this stuff by now. They were 2-10 last year, picked to finish last in the Sun Belt. They were dominated. They were physically the University of Tennessee was physically dominated.
They give up 213 yards rushing.
It's just unbelievable. 242 yards total offense and 24 points in the second half. They gave up. Just destroyed by Georgia State, a team that Memphis throttled last year.
They got outscored 17-0 in the fourth quarter, or 17-10.
And then
the
what was interesting was, and it's funny because David was saying I shouldn't criticize Tennessee, Memphis should just celebrate on their own. Everyone in the world was savaging Tennessee, including what was interesting, the people who cover Tennessee were particularly savaging Tennessee.
Yeah, and shout outs to Blake Topmeyer who did the film review. And he showed some offensive or some defensive line sets.
This is where the two defensive linemen and two ends were on the same.
I did like the defensive end that was 3 yards behind the other defensive end, but he was in a 4-point stance because you know he was going to get Jeff from 3 yards behind the play. He was going to get some leverage. I did enjoy that. But the best part is, like,
it's because
they ran it again. Like it was the same look again.
So Pruitt. Hasn't let anyone see any practices, right? And that's why like literally the cruelest people to them. And there's all sorts of jokes. Like Smokey has answered the has entered the transfer portal, right? Like there's every Tennessee joke you can possibly imagine is being told now. All of them deserved, because here's the real problem. This is all the product of an S show of an administration.
Yes.
Of letting Philip Fulmer take control and run out. I wasn't necessarily a believer in Greg Schiano. Were you?
I actually didn't think Schiano was going to be that bad of a hire. Like, right. he is a dynamic recruiter. He's always been that. And to me, like, the things that he was going to do
is the things Tennessee wants done.
I know this. Like, if you would have asked Georgia, would you have rather have seen Jeremy Pruitt or Greg Schiano be Tennessee's coach? They would have said we'd rather see Pruitt.
Okay, so hot seat.
How can you lose to Georgia State and not?
Seat. Like you are absolutely like hot seat.
Well, because the whole deal is he's got to make a bowl game.
Going to be on the sidelines by the time the season's over.
Well, how's the BYU game look? Oh, that is my favorite. How Phil, because I was actually, I thought that would have been fun if Fulmer was trying to sabotage the coaching search so that it ended up getting just bad enough where, Coach, we need you to come save us. We need you. Need you to come save us.
I've always said there will be a day when Tennessee football's back, but man, they got a long ways to come
back.
It
will not be with Jeremy Pruitt. I feel confident saying that.
Okay, who's next?
Things look good early.
Yeah, Florida State, man. Kendall Briles marching up and down the field. Woohoo! They're back. Seminoles are back. They race out on big play after big play after big play to a 31-13 lead.
And then the second half happened.
Willie Taggart is now 5-8 as the head coach of Florida State. His buyout, $17 million.
Quick shout-outs to Jimmy Sexton.
Florida State loses 36-31, gained 49 second-half yards. And then Willie Taggart says they got to talk to the strength and conditioning coach about hydration.
Because we know the boys from Boise were very well-adjusted to that Florida heat.
You know what it is, those boys from Boise. Yep, exactly right. They got out-hydrated by the boys from Boise.
It can happen to any of us.
It can happen to any of us. Man, there's a lot of these. They were just looking bad. Disastrous hires, right?
Yes.
Who else has a buyout in the way of being fired? There's someone else who has a big buyout in the way of being fired. Anyway, rough day for Florida State and for Willie Taggart. And we will wrap up with...
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey's favorite head coach.
He didn't disappoint.
Liberty lost to Syracuse.
Negative 4 rushing yards and 34 carries.
Who's counting?
Mm-hmm. Offensive genius.
Hugh Freeze coached from his hospital bed. And so I would like you, Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw it as a profile in courage.
Yes.
You did not.
No, I did not, because he demanded that ESPN interview him before the game from the hospital bed, because coaches on their home field always get a pregame interview on television.
He had his Coke Zero.
He did.
Product placement. I guess what you could say, two things about this. You could say, what a great deal. Like, he's even in his hospital bed. He's coaching away, right? Or you could say, my God, Hugh just always needs to be the center of attention.
Yeah.
And I say you subscribe to the second?
Yes, because if he didn't, listen, he's been released from surgery for 2 weeks. You're telling me that they couldn't have whipped him out on a wheelchair, which he's been riding around? Like, by the way, he showed up at practice. He wasn't coaching at practice from his hospital bed. He was coaching at practice.
Yeah, the whole thing was a charade.
Yes.
Whole thing was a charade.
Yes. I've seen this up close in person.
All right, we're going to take a break. GP next. Man, GP, we were talking about whether Memphis should go with the direct approach or the indirect approach in taunting the failures of Ole Miss and Tennessee. GP went with the direct approach on Twitter. Well, what accounted for the savagery, GP? That was savage.
probably rooted in drinking. Let's start there. I'm like maybe 11 White Claws in. So
how do you feel about a White Claw?
I enjoy them. Like, I know that it's not the manliest of drinks, but if you're looking for low calorie, low carb, high alcohol volume, and you don't want to turn to New Amsterdam vodka so early in the day, White Claws serve a good purpose. I found a nice little formula where you can, on holidays or days that are going to be long days, you know, where you might start pouring a drink, pool days, you know, where you go, hey, we're just going to hang out at the pool all day.
Right.
Who wants to make drinks? If you go to New Amsterdam vodka early in the day, it ain't going to work well for you. And so White Claws, I think, serve a purpose of extending the day. You say, I'm committed to White Claws till like 7 p.m., and then I'll turn to New Amsterdam Vodka, and I'll be on a normal schedule, as opposed to you start New Amsterdam Vodka too early in the day. It's, you won't remember a lot of the day.
So, all right. So you had how many White Claws do you believe?
I didn't keep count. I wasn't counting. But I will say I had that one locked and loaded in the draft, you know. That was written, if you will, probably like Friday afternoon, because it was that guy, John Smith, @John93S on Twitter. He was the one during the show on maybe Thursday or Friday, when I was talking about all of this, and he tweeted at me like, you know, Tiger High should be on their knees begging Ole Miss to continue the series. You need us. We don't need you. Then he told me to eat a bag, and I responded on radio very briefly.
He told you to eat a bag.
I don't think he actually meant a bag as much as a bag of something.
Right.
That's the expression I've heard. But yes, he did. He instructed me to eat a bag. And so I addressed it very briefly on radio, and then I started talking to Dan Walker. But I was like, you know what? This will be a nice guy to make an example of if Memphis does indeed handle Ole Miss on Saturday. So I had it locked and loaded, and I'll be honest. I almost pulled the trigger like in the second quarter. And then I was like, no. I know how this works. I pull the trigger right now. I'm going to be on Old Takes Exposed in about 3 hours. So I'm just going to wait for Brady White to take a knee, and then I'll pop him. And to the extent that it was a shot very specific at people like him. Like, I have tons of friends and family members who are Ole Miss fans.
Right.
I swear to God, you could check my phone. I didn't text message one of them or to make a joke. If you boil it down to what it actually is, it's a good currently good football program beating a currently bad football program. Nothing more, nothing less. But to the people like John Smith, who consistently look down at the University of Memphis, both as an institution of higher learning and football program, I've never had much patience for that. Because, like, with all due respect, Ole Miss ain't an Ivy League school. And with all due respect, Ole Miss football, relative to its league, has been a historic embarrassment. So for you to look down at another football program or institution, especially when that football program is better than you, has always seemed weird to me, especially weird right now. And so I was hoping to make an example out of John Smith, and I think I clearly did. Although I will say, usually if you bring somebody like that, like a guy who's got, I'm going to assume it's his real name, I don't know, but it's a pretty common name, so you probably can't pin him down exactly. But usually when you bring somebody who is a mostly anonymous figure out into the light by using their own words against them, they will delete their tweet and perhaps delete their account. I actually made two people delete their entire Twitter accounts on Saturday simply by using their own words against them. But John Smith, for better or worse, he was ready to fight this thing out with anybody and was still fighting it out as of last night. Almost like the guy in the bar.
What's there left? What is there left to say, Gary? What is there left to say?
He just doubles down on Tiger High and telling people to eat bags. You know, like, he still just says, you're Tiger High. You know, you're probably going to get murdered in Memphis because it's a violent city. Which, by the way, this is nothing to joke about, so I'm not joking. But, like, only one of these schools, the University of Memphis or the University of Mississippi, currently has a student in jail for murdering another student.
Yes.
So, like I'd probably stay away from those kind of comments right now. But beyond that, he's like, he's just going nonstop. He's almost like the guy in the bar who, like, the bouncers have said, it's time to go. and there's like four of them, and it's like clearly it's over with for you. You're going to take an L today, but he just keeps swinging nonstop. He doesn't care how it's going to end. He just doesn't want it to end. So a tip of the hat for his intensity, but still the comment I think was worthy of being goofed on because it's a goofy comment.
Well, and that's why I fully endorse Memphis fans not just reveling in their own – listen, they got their own offensive issues to worry about, which we may get to in a moment, but not just reveling in the victory and where they are relative, but reveling in the misery of Tennessee and Ole Miss because they have – and I suppose, yes, turn the other cheek, et cetera. But they have for decades had to hear themselves called Tiger High. And this is at a time when – I mean, David Cobb was trying to tell me, why does Memphis need to lecture Ole Miss and Tennessee, just stand on their own quality. They just celebrate. Well, I don't know. Like, Tennessee and Ole Miss have been better than Memphis for years, but never stopped calling Memphis Tiger High. So I don't begrudge Memphis fans at all for if on this first day back to work, they are doing the land shark. And, I mean, Anthony Miller, he tweeted Ole Miss's ass. Like, he was pretty blunt. And Jake Elliott, Ole Miss equals little brother. And I don't begrudge him because they've had to take it for years and years and years.
Yeah, I don't begrudge anybody who wants to go that route. Like, I personally didn't go that route. Like, I'm not running around making fun of Ole Miss. Again, when you cut it down to what it actually is, what happened on Saturday, what's happening right now, it's just one football program is run.
You
by
said
a
they should. You just said they should start scheduling Tiger Middle.
It was a comment directed specifically at.
I think that was lost on people, Gary. I think the fact that it was just directed to Jay, that you have your own personal battle with John Smith, I just read it as, hey, they should stop Tiger High. They should read Tiger Middle. Looked like you were goofing on Ole Miss to me.
Listen, I'm not here to teach reading comprehension to everybody on Twitter. I don't feel like that's my responsibility. But again, if you read the tweet word for word, here's what it says. If you're an Ole Miss fan who refers to Memphis as Tiger High,
that's right.
Perhaps you should encourage your administration to get a home and home field.
But that's not just John Smith. That's not just John Smith. That's a lot of Ole Miss fans. And that's my point. Those people, and there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of Tennessee fans who've called Memphis Tiger High over the years. You should maybe you have to ask them, if go up to them first and say, have you ever called Memphis Tiger High? And then rip into them, right? But there's a lot. It's not just John Smith.
No, it's not just John Smith, and it's not just John Smith on Twitter, you know, last week. And to me, that is the most insulting thing. Like, there are perhaps times throughout history, not recent history, not often, but perhaps times in history where an Ole Miss football fan could look down at the University of Memphis, and if you want to make a Tiger High joke after you beat them by 50, I guess that's the good time to do it. But when the Memphis football program is being run better than your football program, when the Memphis football coach is better than your football coach, when the Memphis football players are better than your football players, and when the Memphis football team is better than your football team, in a world where Memphis has no advantage whatsoever when it comes to creating a high-caliber football team, I don't know, shut the F up.
I guess that would be my view. Shut the F
up. Sometimes sometimes you have to recognize in all walks of life where you should just
take your
shut
L.
up.
Take your L
yeah.
and shut
like,
up.
This ain't the time to be talking. Like, you know, I'm just going to shut up. And for whatever reason, John Smith and people like John Smith, they don't seem to grasp that concept very well.
Other thoughts about the – you watched it on TV. How did it look to you on TV?
Look great. I do think, you know, I'm not one of those people who, you know, it hits pause and then starts counting. But it did look like there were more than 44,000 people in the stadium, if only because it holds 58,000, and I didn't see places for 14,000 more people to go. And so it was a nice visual. I thought it was a nice, you know, 3.5-4 hour commercial for the University of Memphis because they didn't just focus on the game. They, you know, they talked about all sorts of aspects of the city of Memphis and just Memphis in general. And so I anytime you can get on that stage, you know, network television, particularly when you're operating outside of the Power Five, it's a great commercial for the place that we live. The WGC event on CBS with Jim Nantz was another example of that. On Saturday, we got a slightly different but equally impressive version of it. The defense was obviously fabulous, surprisingly fabulous, and you hope that we find out going forward that's a reflection of the quality of the defense and not a reflection of Ole Miss stinks on offense. I'm not sure which that is, by the way. We might find out it's somewhere in the middle. But either way, to hold an SEC school to 10 points is obviously a big deal. And then if you are looking for a point of concern, it's a point of concern that I've had dating back to last season, and that's the quarterback. I know that often the numbers look good and efficient, but the eyeballs tell you a different story. And he does not make plays to extend drives. He does not make plays when you need him to make plays. I would be terrified if I were Memphis of a situation you find yourself in when you go, okay, down four, got to go 70 yards in the next 2:45 to win this game. Brady, go march us down the field. I'm just not sure he's equipped to do that consistently, if at all. And it's why last season when I suggested, not like banging on the drum, you got to fire Tubby Smith and hire Penny Hardaway, but just suggesting that, you know, if I were Mike Norvell, I would be looking at the grad transfer market and trying to find me a starting quarterback for the 2019 season, because I don't think the one they have is that great. And I think, and I remember back when I said it last December, not everybody agreed with me. Some people even acted like I was crazy. But I think if you watch that game Saturday as a Memphis fan, you can be impressed by the win, impressed by the crowd, impressed by the direction of the program, impressed by the defense, and still go, ooh, we might have a quarterback problem.
Oh, I think it's clearly you have to come away with that. It was after the bowl game. It was when you take here's Brady White last year, when he wasn't responsible for the explosive plays, he could just give the ball to Darrell Henderson or throw the ball 3 yards to Tony Pollard or whatever, and they could make the explosive plays. Listen, that offense scored 45 points a game last year. So,
right.
It was hard to – like, however they did it, they were capable of doing it, right? Now you got Patrick Taylor, who can run for a bunch of yards if you pound him 27 times, but isn't going to take it to the – like, that's not what he does. Kenny Gainwell, obviously, I actually have more hope for. But that's just like – this is what Jonah said over the weekend, and I think it's right. Brady White is Jacob Karam. And he can't play piano. He's a Ph.D., but like that's what
who, by the way, got benched his senior year. So think about
now,
that.
But there's no Paxton Lynch. Yeah. Like that, he's also the best quarterback they have. Like,
I agree, and
they tried to get a transfer. Like, they went into the transfer market. They didn't find anyone better, and they didn't want to bring in anyone as good. You know what I mean? Like, who they think was better. So all you can do is hope that, you know, like that what they're saying is right. That if he sets, but right now there's absolutely reason for skepticism. Of course there is, and I think there was back to the Navy game last year. So I mean, I think Brady got pounded last year by people, and I think. And actually, it's a point that Dan made on your it's not just that he doesn't have a strong arm. He doesn't release the ball quickly. Like, sometimes you can compensate by releasing quickly. Anyway, Mike continues to defend him and says that, listen, the real problem Saturday, and this was a problem, was the pass rush. And so
Sure. They
didn't. So we'll see. But there's my concern. Of course I'm concerned. I don't know how you can't be concerned. I don't know how you can't be concerned. And it's as a guy who likes Brady because he's a great guy, you know, but you want him to be. There are a lot of quarterbacks who came in, stepped in for the first time Saturday and lit it up. And he did not.
Right. And again, it's not just a one game thing. This has been identifiable for a while. And you're exactly right. You know, when you got two NFL running backs to create big plays for you, you don't have to create them for yourself. But with this personnel available to him, or any quarterback, you probably do need to make plays every once in a while, like create something out of nothing. And I don't know how often he creates something out of nothing. Your larger point is right. It is what it is. You know, like Barton Simmons and I were going back and forth on this the other day, and he was like, well, I'm sure, you know, if they had better, they would play somebody else. And I agree completely. Like, Brady White is the best quarterback on that campus, and that's why he should start game two. But my issue was, to the extent that it's an issue at all, I thought it would have been wise to go out, to not be saying, we're set at quarterback. Go out and say, we got to find somebody better than this guy. And it might be true. They just couldn't find that person.
They tried to get Jalen Hurts. You know, looks like Jalen Hurts, they landed in a pretty good spot.
Right. You're not going to go beat Oklahoma for a quarterback. You know, you're just not. So I get it that, you know, the quality grad transfer quarterback, there are usually enough Power 5 schools in need of a quarterback for this next season that there's just going to be a better landing spot than the University of Memphis. And I suppose that is exactly what happened. But while being super excited, if I were a Memphis fan, about what we just watched, if the goal is genuinely to win a conference championship, go undefeated, play in a New Year's Day bowl,
doesn't look like
it scares me to have to rely on him to do the things he probably needs to do to get you to that place.
You made the point last week when you asked Mike Norvell to his face how he felt about getting passed over by Ole Miss in Tennessee for the job, but you made the point that you wondered if he was coaching with his chip on his shoulder. With all due respect, I thought it was a ballsy question, but it is amazing that Tennessee and Ole Miss hired two coaches who were not Mike Norvell, and they're like, it's ridiculous. It's the idea that Jeremy Pruitt, and did you see the savagery of the Ole Miss, of the Tennessee beat writers going after Jeremy Pruitt on Twitter?
Oh, sure.
Like, they hate him because not only is he evidently not a good football coach, at least so far, he's not, like, good at that part of the job.
When you lose your beat writers, you've got a real problem. Those should be the last guys to jump off board if you have any sort of personal skills, people skills at all. Honestly, it's the same thing I said about Tubby Smith, and I know these are different deals, but when Jonah worked at 24/7 Sports and he was like coming out blasting the Memphis basketball staff, I was like, that's when Go Tigers 247 turns on you? Like, that they're the last people. They should never turn on you. Like, they're employed to serve you. Like, the idea that when you lose those people, you've got real problems. And so, again, that question. And by the way, for people who have asked on Twitter, I did talk to Mike subsequent to our interview last Thursday, I guess it was. And he was super cool. He understood exactly the question I was asking and the context with which I was asking it. But I could acknowledge, and I said this last week, I was maybe projecting a little bit. I don't know if Mike Norvell would coach with a chip on his shoulder. I know I sure as hell would. If I were passed over by, and I don't think he would have taken the Ole Miss job under those circumstances. I do believe he would have taken Tennessee. Either way, if Tennessee and Ole Miss had spots to fill in terms of a head coach and they didn't offer me their job, I would be insulted by that, and I would coach with a chip on my shoulder when I was coaching against Ole Miss or any SEC school. And let me say this, because I know there's an Ole Miss fan about to tweet me and say, come on, Parrish, you know why Ole Miss and Tennessee passed on Mike Norvell, because of all this message board stuff. You and I have addressed this before. To the extent that there's a, quote, red flag with Mike Norvell, I'm just telling you, it is not anything that makes you unhireable. If it were, he wouldn't be coaching at the University of Memphis right now. Let's not be stupid about this. And so I'll say this until the day I die. I don't think Mike would have taken the Ole Miss job, but Ole Miss should have offered him the job. And I do think he probably would have taken Tennessee job. And if I were Tennessee, I'd feel stupid for not hiring him, because right now you instead hired an inexperienced coach who just lost a game that has basically, throughout the history of the program, good times and bad, been impossible for your head coach at UT to lose. Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, anybody else, they don't lose games like that. And for you to get embarrassed on your home field in your home opener and not go, you know what, maybe we should have hired the guy at Memphis who had already shown he can run a high-level program in this state, seems impossible to me.
Last question, I'm taking you along, Memphis Madness, the date has been announced. It is the first Thursday in October 3rd, I believe. October 3rd is the date. Jalen Green will be there. I'm sure Jason and John are going to have to put up with some jokes, but listen, they've been right about a lot of stuff since then, including a lot of recruits. So I'm not going to be telling any of those jokes, it should be fun. Yes,
it'll be fun. listen, it's going to be about the team. It's going to be about that recruiting class. I mean, how there's only one school a year that gets to introduce the number one recruiting class in America to its fan base. And this particular year, it's usually Duke or Kentucky. And this particular year, it's going to be the University of Memphis. So it is an event that will be wild and filled with hope regardless. The one issue I would take with the university's approach here is in the release, they said they will not announce musical acts in advance in order to keep the attention on the team. And I just think that's flawed thinking because it will not keep the attention on the team.
It keeps the attention on who the hell are the musical guests.
That's exactly right. It fuels the speculation of who is going to be there. I think they'd be so much better off if they just said, hey, here's who we got. And people can like it or not like it, but this is our event. I don't know of any other school that keeps things secretive about their Midnight Madness. Like when Villanova is going to have Nicki Minaj, they say, we're going to have Nicki Minaj. You know, when UCLA is going to have Rick Ross, they say, we're going to have Rick Ross. And so I just think you're so much better. It's like if your goal is to keep the attention on your team, and I really think that's just an excuse to keep it, like, vague, unknown, but I'll take them at their word. To turn our team, good. Then you should go ahead and announce who's going to be there as soon as you know, because unless you do, trust me, it'll be a topic on your show and Jason and John's show and every other show. So who's going to be there on Thursday night? It actually works against what you say you're trying to do. The mystery will be the core of the conversation, way more so than James Wiseman, Boogie Ellis, or anybody else.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.